afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly muster together. My greetings this afternoon go out to all who are cancer survivors. I have a reason for doing this because when I get to the binnacle list part of our regular broadcast, I'll have a little bit more to say about that. But there are so many of Captain Joe's people who have been brave and complete and who have done all of the things that were necessary, and including terrible radiation, including terrible intervention of various kinds of chemicals and all sorts of other treatments in order to come out on the other side into the sunshine and into the sunlight. My admiration for each one of you who is a cancer survivor is complete. And I recognize that here as we get together for our all-too-short period of time together on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the frequency modulated band and on streaming live all over the world from Singapore on one side of the world. And I believe I still have one or two listeners in Singapore, even though my family is no longer living there. To the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, and I know that I have listeners there because my Swedish family has ended their sabbatical in San Diego and have now returned to the Kingdom of Sweden, which is now a NATO member and causing some interesting and, to some people, discord in the polar world. And we'll have some remarks about that, not today, but in the appropriate time and place, I will have more to say about that. When I get my dear and good friend and colleague, Captain Dr. Professor Lawson Brigham, is probably when we will talk about that. The binnacle list is a relatively good one this week. I have indeed heard from my dear friend and colleague, Jay, who is struggling and battling with a particularly bad form of cancer. I had a long signal from him last night, which laid out the treatment course, which includes chemicals, and it includes radiation, and it includes a number of other very unpleasant aspects of his treatment. The signal that I sent back to him was a short one. It was a strengthening message, and it was to give him a Bravo Zulu, a well done in military parlance, a Bravo Zulu for being so brave and so complete. Whether or not the term of remission, if remission there be, is going to be long or short, I know that my friend has come to a realization of the preciousness of life, of his life, of the good that he has done during that lifetime, and of which I'm very much aware because we have worked together on a number of things for the good of the island community. And so, along with my moving Jay to a little bit less acute part of the binnacle list, I also remind all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list for reasons physical, for reasons mental, for reasons emotional, for reasons financial, for whatever reasons you are suffering some deviation from the best kind of life that you can have, know that you are, as always, in the palm of my hand, and you are as close to my heart as you can possibly ever be. This reminds me to remind all hands who are veterans, all hands who have honorably served, all hands, all of Captain Joe's people all over the world who took the same oath that I did. I have been a sworn member of our military since I was 17, and that's true of many of Captain Joe's people. Every one of you who is an honorably served veteran, whether you are a retired person like I am, or whether you are a person who has an honorable discharge, you should be a member of the Department of Veterans Affairs. You should go ahead and make the effort to get together with a veteran service officer at your closest Department of Veterans Affairs facility. If you are a Vietnam veteran, you should be on the Agent Orange register. If you are a Vietnam veteran and you are showing symptoms of any malaise, you should get that checked out. And it doesn't matter what your rank or rate was. It is important that all who are entitled to being considered by the Department of Veterans Affairs exercise those rights, because those are things that all of us have earned. And if we do not exercise those rights, then somebody in the bureaucracy will say they don't really care. It doesn't matter. Maybe we can talk about slimming down the Department of Veterans Affairs. Maybe we can talk about not hiring quite so many positions. Maybe we can talk about, because the suicide rate has gone down. I don't know that it has. I would always hope that it has. That we don't need to provide nearly as many people to counsel. So if we don't use these things which we have earned and to which we are entitled, and which a supposedly grateful nation is telling us that we should exercise, if we don't do that, then we provide a climate and an atmosphere for people who are known in the military in a somewhat pejorative way as bean counters to say, it's time for us to cut back on that. It is not time for us to cut back on it. What it is time for is for each of us who has an entitlement to exercise that entitlement. Take your DD-214. Every one of us has one. Take your DD-214 to your veteran service officer and let him and you work out together whether or not you have any benefits to which you are entitled. Not a privilege, not something that, oh, well, maybe we'll do it because we're just a caring people, but to which you're entitled by virtue of your service, by virtue of having taken that oath to protect and defend the Constitution. A little bit farther on in the program, I'm going to get as close as I ever get to political discussions on this broadcast, and I'm going to talk about the subject of stolen valor. But before I get to that, I want to make sure that I get a couple of other things in first. The first one is that the book this week came to me as a gift from my friend Pam. And it is a copy of The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the book is a reprint that was done in 1902 by a publisher in London. And it was to reproduce in exactly the way that it was printed in the first edition that Darwin issued in the first edition was in, I think, 1847. And the It even reproduces the title page of the first edition. And the title page says the name of the book is On the Origin of Species or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life by Charles Darwin, Master of Arts. Darwin himself was never knighted. And in fact, his son George was indeed knighted. And here is where the connection comes to your Captain Joe. I'm a member of Darwin College at the University of Cambridge. I'm also a member of the university itself. I'm a member because I hold a graduate degree from the university. I'm a member of the Senate House. I'm entitled to vote on the chancellor. When the invitation to come and vote on the chancellor arrives, it says you must come to Cambridge. You cannot vote by in absentia. You must come to Cambridge, and you must don the robe appropriate to your academic rank. Mine is I am a master of philosophy. And I am also a member of the Scott Polar Research Institute. But in my membership in Darwin College, I am entitled to use all of the facilities of the college, which is in Silver Street, across the street from Queens, which is one of the old line Cambridge University colleges. And I'm entitled to use the facilities, and one of those facilities is the house that was owned by Charles's son, Sir George. And when Darwin College was formed up right after World War II, it's one of the newest of the 31 Cambridge University colleges. When it was formed up, the property was bought from the Darwin family, and it remains today the headquarters of Darwin College. It is right on the River Cam. And if you go through the building and you go past the Porter's Lodge, we still use the term Porter's Lodge, which we have used for 800 years in the colleges in Cambridge. You go past the Porter's Lodge and you greet the porter, whomsoever that may be on duty, and go through the building and go out on the other side, and you go into this absolutely beautiful garden, which was part of Sir George's family's legacy. The college has added on to it. It has bought other property. It has bought property along Trumpington Road and has built some student accommodation back there. But the main building is the one that was owned by Sir George Darwin. And when I am in Cambridge, I always stop by Darwin College just to make sure that all is still well. So many thanks to Pam for this particular gift. And I am going to read just a small piece from his introduction, which is something that we can apply to our lives even today, after all these years. So quoting from Charles Darwin, M.A., Master of Arts, "No one ought to feel surprise at much remaining as yet unexplained in regard to the origin of species and varieties if he makes due allowance for our profound ignorance in regard to the mutual relations of all the beings which live around us." And we can certainly apply that to our lives as well today. In other words, we all need to cut each other a lot more slack than what we're doing in our world today. Everybody cut everybody else a little bit of slack. The magazine today is from last week's Seattle Times, the Pacific Northwest magazine. The cover shows a Coast Guard helicopter with a rescue basket being hoisted. And it says, "To the rescue." A behind the scenes and up in the air look at the life-saving work of the Coast Guard sector, Puget Sound. I found this to be a particularly interesting article because it is written by a naval aviator who is no longer serving in the Navy, a naval aviator who also was a flight instructor and who instructed a number of young fledgling Coast Guard aviators, because all of our flight training is done with the Navy at Pensacola and at the other airfields that are around Pensacola where naval flight training takes place. And the article goes on to talk about mostly the search and rescue business in Sector Seattle. Sectors is the new name for what were called groups. I have been a group commander. I just looked at the photograph of the sector commander for Puget Sound, and he is a cutterman, as am I. I will pursue him and get him on the program, Captain Mark McDonald, cutterman. Have him come on, and we'll talk about some of the other things that the sector does. For example, the captain of the port for Puget Sound, including the ports of Seattle and Tacoma, are all within Sector Puget Sound. I live in a house that looks out over the south end of Puget Sound. I manage that end. Captain McDonald just doesn't know it yet. And when I get him on, we will have a little bit of a discussion and we'll do some chart work. And I will show him what my area of command and command responsibility is, even though he doesn't know it. I want to talk quickly, and I have to move quickly here. I've talked a little bit too long on a couple of other things already. But it's my program, and so I get to allocate the time the way it feels right to me, and so far it's all felt just right. I want to talk about this business about stolen valor. Stolen valor to military people is a height of wickedness. I can go and look at the ribbon bars and the badges of any military member, and I can tell you where he served or she served, what his or her qualifications are. And in the case of, for example, Air Force aircraft commanders, the level of the amount of flying that they've done. I cannot do that with a naval aviator, and Coast Guard pilots are naval aviators. They carry a number, a naval aviator number, whatever number they are. And there's no way to tell by looking at their wings, just as there is no way to tell by looking at my cutterman insignia, how many ships I've commanded, how many flight hours a naval aviator has. But the term stolen valor means that there are people out there who either have never served or whose service was other than honorable, and who wear a uniform, and they wear the medals, the decorations, the badges of whatever particular person they aspire to be. It is, in fact, the most malignant kind of lying, because the people who have earned those qualifications, who have earned those ribbons, those people who in the sea services, for example, who are wearing the combat action ribbon, those are all people that have been there. A Coast Guardsman who is wearing a Coast Guard medal has exhibited the highest level of sacrifice and the highest level of bravery and survived. So when I look at the ribbon bars and the badges and the ribbons and the medals of anybody in the military, I assume that he has earned and is entitled to wear each one of them. And he gets my honor and he gets my greeting. And if he's the chief petty officer, he also gets from me a comment, Chief, I was raised by chief petty officers, and I thank you for carrying on those traditions. Because if I have had any success as a captain, it started out many years ago with the two chiefs who were my chiefs in my first command when I was 23. So when we're now getting a lot of people batting around the term stolen valor, people who are wearing or talking about or showing a display of awards to which they're not entitled, I caution great care at all of this. The other thing I caution is that no one who has not served has any right to criticize the service of anyone who has. So if you choose to listen to people who are disparaging the service of anyone, and now we're talking about people in the political realm, then at least make sure that the person who is doing the criticizing and the commenting is someone who has served, someone who took the oath, someone who has survived basic training or boot camp, or the first year at any one of the service academies, someone who has actually been there, and in particular, get somebody who has commanded him or herself. In that context, when we hear the term command sergeant major or command master chief, the term command is a position. It is not a rank. It's not a rate. The rate is master chief in the Navy and the Coast Guard. The rank in the Air Force, Marine Corps, and Army is sergeant major. And the term command means that he or she is the senior advisor to that commander. In my service and in my ships, the senior enlisted person that was in my crew was my chief of the boat. My chief of the boat in my Ingham was Master Chief Boiler Tender Merle Basso. Master Chief Basso ran a really tight fire room. In those ships, of course, the Ingham is a steamship, was a steamship, had boilers. We no longer have that rating, the rating of boiler tender in the Coast Guard. It still exists in the Navy because every nuclear-powered vessel is the reactor is the boiler. And it still drives turbines, so they still have boiler tenders, I'm sure, in the Navy, probably boiler tender nuclear. So the term command means that a commander has selected that particular sergeant major or master chief to be his senior enlisted advisor. So the rank, sergeant major, the rate, master chief, is then modified by one person, the senior enlisted advisor. The command master chief is the term that's used today in my ships. It was always the chief of the boat. I borrowed that or absconded with it from the submarine service. The chief of the boat has been with the submarine service since the beginning, probably since Holland went down with the first one. It remains with me today. In my shore command up in the Sioux, my senior enlisted advisor was a master chief electrician's mate, John Rowan. I will tell a couple John Rowan stories on here someday. All of this is to tell you, beware of all of the any disparaging remarks about the character of somebody's military service. Good old DD-214, which is the document that tells what the character of service and where a person served and the medals and awards that to which he or she is entitled, is the document, and we should be able to have for politicians who aspire to use their military service as part of their CV. They should be willing to let us have a look at their DD-214. If you see a DD-214 and you do not know what it is saying to you, send me a signal, CaptainJoe@CenturyTel.net, and I will interpret it for you, and I will get back to you and let you know. People who have served and then go on to serve as politicians deserve special honor, so long as they are honest, so long as they are compassionate, and so long as they give a rat's ass about what is going on around them, and in particular the people that they aspire to serve. And that is what I have to say about all of that. I did a wonderful series of tours on Sunday out at Point Robinson Light. And one of the things that is beginning to evolve, the word must be getting around that if you bring children, then they get special attention so far as stamps on posters. I have a wonderful poster that can be gotten only at Point Robinson Light, and I have a really special stamp that I put onto it. And I make a big thing of it with children that come to be a part of the lighthouse experience. The other word that's getting around is you can bring your dog. And I provide not only fresh water for the dogs, but I also provide healthy treats that come from my friend Megan in Traverse City, Michigan. We had just a great day on Sunday with the tours. And then yesterday I did a book tour for a lovely lady by the name of Marie. And she had sent me a signal and she said, I can't get there on Sunday. Can we work something out for a Monday? And I looked at the calendar and I said, we certainly can. And so I met her out at the light yesterday and she had her passport. Now, people who are really serious about going to lighthouses have a passport, which is issued by one of the lighthouse societies. And we also sell them in our ship store. And she opened up her passport, and she had a collection of probably 30 lights that she had been to and gotten the stamps, to which I was happy to add number 31. But we talked about not only lighthouses, but we talked about other things as well. And she pointed out that for many people, lighthouses, and pointed out something that I have talked about before, that for many people, lighthouses have symbolism that is beyond just the fact that they are a tower that has a light source up on the top, and it is to guide mariners to keep them safe, but that they have symbolism, and some for some people it is a religious symbolism, and for other people it has other kinds of symbolism. So I urge people who would like to have a tour on other than Sunday to send me a signal at CaptainJoe@CenturyTel.net, and we can almost always work something out. My hand-wound Omega, which is back safely and in beautiful shape from Fircrest Jewelers, tells me that we are now up to two bells of the afternoon watch, which means that it is time for me to say that we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, that this is your Captain Joe, that I am on station, as always, on station and watching properly, and that all of you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand. And furthermore, I remind everybody that each of us has a six, and that we watch out for each other's six, for dangers, for attackers who may be coming from the stern, or from that big wave that might be coming to use the inelegant sailor's term, poop us. We meet again here next week, and there'll be more of the same sort of thing, and I am going to make a little presentation to both the counselor and to Captain O'Brien on the air next week. So I hope that all of you will be with me then. This is your Captain Joe. Once again, I am on station and watching properly. All of you are in the palm of my hand.